Chapter 13 of the Autobiography of Lord Alfred Douglas. This Legamus recording may be distributed and adapted freely for any purpose. Chapter 13. I must beg to point out that if in this book I go into the odious question of finance, it is only because Wilde has forced me to do it by the deliberate lies and misrepresentations he was guilty of in the unpublished part of De Profundis, and again, afterwards, by word of mouth, to numerous persons between the time of his release from prison and his death. As I have already remarked in my last chapter, this meanness and bad taste were quite alien to Oscar Wilde as I first knew him. Up to the time of his imprisonment, he was exceedingly generous, hospitable, and open-handed. It was surely natural enough that a man of nearly 40, who takes a violent fancy to an undergraduate of 21, and constantly invites him to lunch and dinner at the best restaurants, should incur a certain amount of expense without expecting that his young friend should make a point of keeping the account balanced by an equal return of hospitality. When I first met Oscar, he had an income of at least £2,000 a year. Quite a lot of money, I can assure you, in the 1890s, and equal to at least £4,000 in the present day. And I had an allowance from my father of £350 a year. I lived with my mother, of course, and had practically everything paid for me, besides having the run of a large number of country houses, and so many invitations to balls, parties, and dinners, that it would have been impossible for me to keep pace with them all, even if I had tried to do so. Obviously, at my age, and with my amount of pocket money, I was more often a guest than a host. But as Oscar Wilde has set down, in his unpublished De Profundis letter, the grossly untrue statement that he had spent more than £5,000 in entertaining me during the time that elapsed between our first meeting and his conviction and imprisonment, just about 3 years, I am constrained to say that £500 or £600 would be much nearer the mark. On the other side of the balance sheet, there is to be considered that, about a year after I first met Wilde, my father wrote to me and said that unless I dropped his acquaintance and gave my word of honour that I would have no more to do with him, my allowance would cease. I refused to drop Wilde, and told my father that if he was mean enough to stop my allowance, he must do so. My allowance was stopped in the year 1893, nor did I ever receive another penny from my father till his death in December 1899, when I came automatically into my share of the money provided for the younger children of his marriage. So that my friendship with Wilde, and my refusal to give him up, cost me £2,450 in those 7 years. What I lost in other ways, such as social position, the natural and unquestioned right of entry into the inner circle of what was probably at that time the most exclusive and aristocratic set in the world, is not to be gauged in terms of money. But to stick solely to the money side, I may say, as I said in Oscar Wilde and myself, that I really actually spent far more on him than he did on me. When he started to fight with my father, I gave him £360 to pay the expenses of the action. Of course, I had to get the money from my mother, but practically all the money I had at all after my father cut off my allowance came from my mother. And later, when I left him in my villa at Naples, I gave him £200. Not much, you may say, but it was all I could manage to get, and represented a lot to me at the time. During the 5 years that elapsed between Wilde's imprisonment and the death of my father, when I came into a certain amount of money, I was always very hard up. My average income during those years, most of which I spent abroad and living on my own, was certainly not more than £400 a year. In fact, I had barely enough to keep myself going. But even so, I was continually helping Wilde to the utmost extent that I could manage. In the year that elapsed between the death of my father and that of Wilde himself, I gave the latter quite £1,000. As long as he lived, I would have gone on giving him money whenever I had it to give. The last cheque I sent him, for £10, reached him, as marvellous to relate, is actually recorded by Robert Ross in his account of Oscar's death, which appears in Harris's Life and Confessions of Oscar Wilde, only a few days before he died. Frank Harris, in that book, affirms that after Oscar's release from prison, what he is pleased to describe as the Queensbury family undertook to provide Wilde with money, and he bitterly reproaches me, by implication, because this money was not forthcoming. Like almost everything else in Harris's book which concerns me, directly or indirectly, this story is utterly untrue. Who were the Queensbury family at that time? The term in this connection could apply only to my father, who had deliberately smashed Wilde, and would be as likely to give him money or any other assistance as he would have been to give it to the devil himself. My mother, who looked upon Wilde as a villain and a scoundrel, and bitterly lamented my association with him, and my brother Percy, afterwards 9th Marquess of Queensbury, who disliked and despised Wilde, and did what he did for him, that is to say, went bail for him after he had been committed for trial, only at my urgent request, because he loved me and was prepared to back me up against my father, or against anyone else, to the last limit of his capacity. The only glimmering of a foundation for this preposterous story of promised assistance for Wilde from the Queensbury family lies in the fact that I myself told Wilde on one occasion that I would endeavour to get my brother Percy to help him. I was as good as my word, and I did implore my brother to do something for him. My brother was the most good-natured and kind-hearted man who ever lived, and he was also devoted to me. His answer to my appeal was the answer he almost invariably made to any appeal for assistance that I ever made to him. He was, as everyone who knew him could testify, a man who always imagined that he was just on the brink of making an enormous fortune. He replied to my request by telling me that he was, for the moment, very pushed for money, but that in a few months he expected to bring off a very big coup, and that as soon as the coup materialised, I could have all the money I wanted, to give to Wilde or for any other purpose. "Don't worry, my dearest boy," he wrote. "In a short time I shall be a very rich man, and if I am a rich man, you, of course, will be the same." Naturally, being in those days nothing if not an optimist, I passed on the glad tidings to Oscar, and it is on this slender foundation that Harris's bunkum about the Queensbury family's undertaking to provide for Oscar Wilde is based. To do my dear brother justice, I do not doubt for a moment that if he had brought off a big coup at that time, or at any time afterwards, he would have immediately made me a large participator in his good fortune. But the coup never materialised, and, on the contrary, my brother, instead of making a fortune, lost practically every penny he had in the world, including about £300,000 which he inherited at the death of my father. The time when he came into this money synchronised with my own inheritance of my modest younger son's portion, so that there was, naturally, no call on him to provide anything for Wilde, whom, as I have already stated, I immediately made a participator in my improved fortunes. Oscar Wilde lived only a year after my father's death, and during that year he had enough money from me and from other sources, including Frank Harris, who claims to have given him £1,000, to have lived in the greatest comfort and luxury. I commend these facts, which, as far as my share is concerned at any rate, can be proved by documentary and legal evidence, to Mr. Robert Harborough Sherard, who is chiefly responsible for the legend that Wilde was left by his friends to starve in Paris. I also commend them to Messrs. André Gide and Davray, who have added their quota to the heavy load of unprovoked and reckless abuse, calumny and vilification which has been heaped on me in return for the constant sacrifice of my own interests which I made on Wilde's behalf, from the day of his downfall to the hour of his death. End of chapter 13.